Blog Talk Radio.
For you today, a new host, Nick here. Fred House Mike, unfortunately, is serving a one-week suspension due to deflating microphones. He's appealing to commission. No, I'm just messing. Fred House Mike on a well-deserved, long-overdue vacation down on the beautiful beaches of the Delaware shorelines. But it's all good because we've got all three frat boys in tonight for this program of the Cleanup Hitters. It's a pretty big show tonight. We've got a lot of trades that happened within the last week, even today, a lot of moves today and a lot more to come. Still some big names on the market like Cole Hamels, David Price, plenty of big names left, but several names already on the move. So we'll get into that. We'll also get into a couple other things on this outline that we put together, hopefully. But there's so much that's broken in the last even few hours, let alone a few days, that we might not even hit half of the pre-scheduled outline, but that's all right. That means we've got a lot of good stuff for you today. Also, something that just broke is Henry Mejia caught again for PEDs will now have a 162-game suspension. I'm sure that will come up at some point throughout the show. There's a few ways to get in touch with the show tonight. You want to get involved, first is via phone. If you want to call in, the number is 347-826-9964, 347-826-9964. If you don't want to call but you got a computer and you're Skype capable, if you click on the little blue button, I think it looks like a little blue button. It's got like a telephone on it. You click that, you log in through Skype, you can connect with us through that. We'll put you on. You can get to us on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at nmandurano. Caleb's on Twitter at CalebOnSports. And Sean Hagen, Sean's on Twitter at Hegs_and_Bacon. Hegs is H-E-G-G-S because his last name is Hagen. So a lot of ways to get in touch today. Also the chat room, if you want to hit up the chat room, I'm sitting here in the chat and we can talk there as well. But as soon as we get our panelists on the line, we will bring them in. I think some technical difficulties holding them back. But again, as soon as they're in, we'll bring them right on. One of the big things that I really, really want to kick off the show with is the Jonathan Papelbon move. Just because it was recent and it's a big deal, the Phillies did wind up trading Jonathan Papelbon to the Washington Nationals for, I believe the return was Nick Pivetta. He is a double-A pitcher, but the deal is done, so Papelbon will not be with the Phillies tonight, who, by the way, are getting started against the Toronto Blue Jays in just a few minutes, and as soon as we get Caleb here, we'll look at his sports machine and see what else is going on around the league. But this Papelbon trade, I want to hit on that. A couple of the other trades that have already happened. The Mets made a move for Tyler Clippard. That's another closer headed to the NL East, or at least to another team in the NL East. Victorino's headed to the Red Sox. Troy Tulowitzki, who I seriously did not believe would be traded, headed to the Colorado Rockies. Who else did we see get traded? We saw Ben Zobrist go to the A's. That was today. We saw Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson head to the Braves. Steve Cishek's on his way to Miami. No, on his way to St. Louis. I'm sorry. And Uribe went to the Mets. I'm sorry. Connor Glaspie to the Angels. Aramis Ramirez to the Pirates, Kazmir to the Astros. So as you can see, there's already been big moves made. Didn't have to wait long into this trade season for any of that to go down. But beyond that, beyond the trades that have already been down, there's still names on the market. There's still big names on the market that you have to imagine will be traded either tonight, tomorrow, or at least by the 31st. We've got Caleb on the line. So Caleb, technical difficulties, I guess, are fixed for Caleb. Still waiting on Sean to come in, and then we'll get started with the show. We'll really jump into things. But first, let's get Caleb on the air. Caleb, our new ESPN affiliate. He new internship with an ESPN-affiliated radio station down in Nashville. Caleb's got a lot of big news tonight. But Caleb, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Yeah, that's all kicking off on Monday here. I go in first day, so I'm looking forward to that. But for right now, man, there have been some trades like crazy. There's just been so many trades in the past 2 days. It's ridiculous. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen here in the next couple of days here. Heck, even in our next hour and a half, who knows? We could even see some happen right now.
Absolutely, got to keep an eye on that. And Caleb, you're also I don't know how this works. You're periscoping tonight?
Yes, I will. I will do it in sometimes in the show just to get us out there. But right now I'm on my phone, but I'm gonna figure this whole thing out here, and then yes, I will be.
Sounds good. We also got Sean on the line. Sean's in with us for our other panelist and our third frat boy on tonight's show. Sean, how you doing?
Good, Nick. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm excited.
Yeah, so am I. First rodeo without the big man.
Yeah, I was just telling all our listeners about his 1 week suspension for deflating the microphones, but
oh yeah, of course.
That's great.
As Fred House Mike usually does to start the show, let's take a look at the MLB standings. One team that's really notable throughout the last week and their last 10 games, 8-2, is the New York Yankees, really pulling away in the AL East, a division that we, for pretty much the entire season, have looked at as the tightest division in baseball. And now the Yankees are 7 games ahead of the Blue Jays and the Orioles, 7.5 ahead of the Rays, and 13 ahead of the Red Sox. So they got hot. That's somewhat notable. Very notable that we've now got an AL East team that's a clear favorite, at least for the next couple of weeks, or at least to deem the best team in the division right now, because for a while it was a toss-up. You know, you could pick any four of those top four teams. You could even throw Boston in there and say Boston should be a buyer. They could contend. But now you've got the Yankees a full 7 games ahead of second place. It's interesting, and you wonder how that affects the trade deadline and what these teams are going to do. You wonder if that turns any of these AL East buyers into sellers. You wonder if the Yankees are going to go out and buy any more than they would have. But looking at the rest of the standings, I mean, anything you guys see that you think is worth noting?
Well, I mean, I just see that. I mean, there's been a lot. There's a lot of gaps here, except for the AL West. Let's see, really the only division that doesn't have a gigantic gap. I mean, if you look, well, and I guess the NL East there, but I mean, it seems that a lot of the teams are just pulling ahead. You know, you just said the Yankees. I mean, they've been pulling ahead. The Cardinals here, they've been also pulling ahead. So it's just interesting to see a lot of the teams are jumping up there. I mean, the Mets, they're playing fantastic. And the Phillies, how about them? 8-2 since the break. How about that?
Yeah, who knows? They might turn into a buyer's deadline.
right? I mean, we can see. We'll see. But
Sean, what do you see in the standings? Do you see anything worth noting? You think the Phillies should be buyers?
Well, I guess it depends on how you would look at it. Knowing Ruben Amaro, we all just saw that Papelbon did end up getting traded today. We're going to be talking about that later in the program. But knowing Amaro, I'm surprised that they're still sellers. I'm surprised that he's not a buyer right now trying to feed him back into the playoffs. But other than that, I think you guys covered most of it. I mean, I don't know if the NL West got mentioned at all. The Dodgers and the Giants. The Giants are only a half game behind the Dodgers right now. So that division seemed pretty close. But other than that, we're definitely starting to get to that point where teams are pulling away, and we're looking to see where these playoffs are going to end up in the coming weeks.
All right, it's 7:10 here, so a lot of games are just getting started. Caleb, why don't you take us around the league?
Tonight, through the use of the sports machine.
All right, well, we got Atlanta and Baltimore just kicking things off. Philadelphia and Toronto, they're in the top of the first. Kansas City and Cleveland, they're going here in just a couple of minutes. Detroit and Tampa, they're also going in a couple of minutes. We got the White Sox in Boston. That game looks like it is postponed. I'm guessing rain. That's what it looks like there. San Diego in New York to face the Mets, and Washington is in Miami. And then a couple of games at 8 o'clock. We've got Pittsburgh up in Minnesota. So that one will be a good game to watch there.
All right, sounds good. So Caleb will keep an eye on the scores, and all three of us will keep an eye on the headlines and the feeds coming in, and we'll see if we can be the first to break any trades to you tonight in tonight's hour and a half. A lot of trades today already, though. I mean, we look at just today. We saw Jonathan Papelbon. We saw Ben Zobrist. Who am I missing, guys? Who else went today? We saw
I think those were the big ones there. I'm trying to think.
I think there were more today.
I think just recently, it was David De Jesus just got traded to the Angels, I believe.
Yes, that
broke just a little while ago.
Yep.
Oh, wow. And what did the Angels get back?
Ooh, got to look that up real quick.
They got a right-handed
pitcher.
Eduard Lopez. I've never heard of him. I think he's a AAA guy, I believe is what that said. So those are the big three from today.
All right. Well, one of them is obviously notably big. It's the Jonathan Papelbon deal. The Phillies, after a year, I mean, we talked about, I think on the show last week, we talked about Papelbon and the Phillies' whole trade deadline situation, how he needs to be moved. And he's said for years now how he wants to be moved. And he finally is. He's to the Nationals to take less money in order to be the closer in exchange for AA pitcher Nick Pivetta. But the Phillies, really two big pieces that everybody expected them to move by Friday. One is gone, Jonathan Papelbon, the other Cole Hamels, which we'll get to in a minute. But first, talking about this Jonathan Papelbon trade, within the division, I think we established he still has next year left on his contract. I'm not sure entirely what the financial status is in regards to what the Nationals will have to pay and what the Phillies will have to pay for this year, next year. But I do know that now the Nationals have Drew Storen and Jonathan Papelbon in the 8th and 9th inning, which really, really, really is a difficult matchup for opposing hitters at the end of games. And you have to imagine that is maybe the stretch that they need to really pull ahead of the Mets. You have to imagine that's the edge, that's the advantage that they needed, because I don't think really anybody was expecting the Nationals to be the first team to trade for an elite closer, given the fact that they had a very good closer already in Drew Storen. But now you look at it and you say, what a win. What a win for the Nationals. So this specific trade, we look at this as Nationals versus Mets. The Mets the other day bringing Tyler Clippard. The Nationals respond by bringing in Jonathan Papelbon. Is one better than the other? Do we think that maybe already a team has put themselves ahead of the other? Because we just went through the standings and we talked about how tight almost every division is, but the National League East is within two games right now. Specifically, the Mets and the Nationals, are they done? Did they do what they needed to do? What do you guys think?
Well, for the Mets, I mean, if they can try to get another bat, I mean, they would be really scary. I mean, they've got a young rotation just jam-packed with great, great arms. So I'm just trying to think of, you know, they might try to go after another bat, but, I mean, for the most part, I mean, I'm thinking that they're basically finished. You know, the Nationals, I really don't know. They just activated Jason Worth from the disabled list. So he's in tonight's lineup after being off of the 60-day DL there. So, I mean, I really don't think that, especially for the Nationals, I think that they're basically done. If the Mets were to make some sort of a move, I'm trying to think of who they would try to go after. I'm not exactly sure if there's any big bat left other than Carlos Gonzalez from the Rockies, but I'm not exactly sure how likely it is that the Rockies are going to trade him right after they just traded Tulowitzki. So I've heard a lot of things that they might try to wait until the winter because he's a free agent after next season. So we'll just have to wait and see there.
Sean, what do you think? Do these trades change at all your predictions or your visions for the outcome of this decision?
I don't think so. I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, we were all talking about how the Nationals were going to be pulling away with the division, which they're obviously not at this point. But I think with the addition of Papelbon, it's definitely going to give them that end game support that is just going to be unreal because they already had a great closer. And now with Papelbon insured the closing spot, I mean, they're just going to have a powerhouse there towards the end of their games. And I agree with Caleb that I don't think the Mets' moves thus far are going to put them over the top. I think they would need a big bat to come in to really solidify their offense and put them in a position where they could possibly take over the Nationals.
Now, how about the other trade today? We look at the Ben Zobrist trade, and I saw that go through, and the first thing that came to mind is, could the Royals have possibly been one of those three teams we were talking about that had interest in Chase Utley? We knew, or we at least thought, that the Angels were one. But whether that was true or not, even if it was true, there were two more teams that we didn't know. And we're sitting there thinking, who could possibly have interest in the worst statistical second baseman in the NL? Probably not for a starter if they had interest, but even at all. I mean, Chase Utley lost his starting job to Cesar Hernandez. I understand he's hurt, but you remember Amaro says that when he comes back, he's not going to be the starter. He's still hitting under 200. Statistically, he's just been awful. You wonder who could have been interested. Then you look at the Royals, who struggled at second base despite their second baseman leading the All-Star vote for a long time in Omar Infante. But they struggled at second base, and then they go make a trade for Ben Zobrist. You wonder, could the Royals have been one of those teams that had interest in Chase Utley? And if that's the case, you look at other teams in the same situation that might be struggling at second base. Maybe the Athletics. Maybe the Diamondbacks. And you say, is it possible that Chase Utley could move from the Phillies to another team? Royals off the market, less teams to deal to, but sticking with the theme of the Phillies to begin this show, guys, Chase Utley, another name that we've heard briefly, could be on the move. None of us believe it, but we see a team that may have had interest, and it leads us to kind of believe, yeah, maybe there are teams that have interest. Is Chase Utley going to be a Philly on August 1st?
I think it's hard to say. I think he could certainly still be on the market. I mean, you look at Chase Utley, and although his numbers aren't saying it this year, he's still a very athletic second baseman late in his career. So if there's a team that's looking for a second baseman and maybe a leader, I mean, he's got veteran talent that a lot of these guys don't have. And if a team really needs a second baseman like Chase Utley, I think that they make a move to be able to bring him on and maybe unload someone that they don't want on their team. So come August 1st, we might see Chase Utley in something other than a Phillies uniform. I think it could happen. I think that it's still out on the table.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility, but I just don't see why somebody would want somebody who's hitting under 200. I just don't see that. I just don't see why.
You know, Caleb, I was saying the same thing. The first thing I thought when I saw the headline was, what three teams? You know, you think maybe one team could use him as like a platoon guy or a veteran guy in the clubhouse
mm-hmm.
that could come off the bench. But three
exactly,
teams,
yeah.
Three teams supposedly had interest in Chase Utley, and that's at the least. There might be more that we don't even know about. And you look at Chase, and at least here in Philadelphia, we've seen him play since the beginning of the season, and we said, Who would want Chase Utley? By all means, have him. Take him. I mean, we love him here, but take him. He's providing absolutely zero offensive production. He's a, you know, he's become a lot slower, a lot less quick on defense. He's injury prone. He's getting up there in age. He's not exactly cheap at the moment, and somebody wants him. So you look around the league and you try to find teams that might be suitors that could fit the mold of a team that would be interested in the Chase Utley, and it's hard to do. You speculate the Angels, you speculate the Royals. You could say someone like the Diamondbacks or the Athletics. You could say someone like you really couldn't say much more. Everybody else has got a second baseman that's far beyond Chase Utley, but it's interesting to hear that three teams are interested. The big piece from the Phillies that's, you know, occupying and consuming pretty much 95% of trade talks right now is Cole Hamels, who the report came out earlier today that they're going to push his Thursday start back to Friday after the deadline. So if he's still on the team, he'll pitch Friday after the deadline. But if he's traded, the no-hitter will have been his last start. That, for a few reasons, is a good idea, one of them being it reduces the chance of injury. Also, it keeps his stock at an all-time high. I mean, for the love of Pete, he's coming off a no-hitter. Very impressive. We look to Cole Hamels, and we look at where he could go across the league. I think the Rangers are a team everybody's talking about now as the leading candidate to receive Cole Hamels. Thoughts on Cole Hamels? Thoughts on if he'll move, where he'll go, what he's worth? The big discussion, at least in Philadelphia, is there's two mindsets. One, you have to move Cole Hamels regardless. He's got to go. You got to find a way to get rid of him. Or two, you got to see what you can get. Hopefully you get a lot, but if you don't, there's no urgency to trade him. What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was about a month and a half ago, and I had a list of five guys that I thought would be traded, and one of them's obviously Hamels, and one of the other guys that I said was Kazmir from the A's, and I said that he would go to either Houston or to the Rangers, and he went to Houston. And I really do think that Hamels is going to be in Texas when this is all said and done within the next 2 days. He will probably be a Texas Ranger just because they have, one, the better farm system. So I just feel like the Phillies, yeah, as much as they want some major league talent, I just think that they're going to be looking to rebuild for the future. And so I just think that Texas just really fits in with what they're wanting. But the Dodgers, that is an interesting scenario. Could they trade Yasiel Puig? They've said that he's not off of the table. So we're going to have to see, but I do think that Hamels will be gone within the next 3 days here.
Sean, what do you think?
Well, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I believe I said it last week, is I'm one of the people that's going to say that if we don't get what we want for Cole Hamels, we shouldn't get rid of him. I mean, he's a stud pitcher, so wherever he goes, he's going to be a stud, so you should be getting, you know, you should pretty much be getting whatever you're asking for him from other teams. So if we don't get what we want, I don't think we should get rid of him, as much as I hate to say it. I mean, I'd love to see Cole be a part of a team where he's going to be winning. I hate to see him struggling with these Phillies, but at the same time, we got to think about the future of this team, and we need something. We're not going to give Cole Hamels away for nothing. It can't happen. So, I mean, we've been here since we're in contention for Cole Hamels. They were asking for him. But I really don't think they've got the trading chips that we need to give us anything that we want for Hamels. I think that he's going to be traded for something much better to a much better team, someone that can give us something that we actually want for him. And if we don't get that, why not keep him around? I mean, you just can't give a guy like Cole Hamels away for nothing. You really can't.
Sean, I agree with you in that you can't give Cole Hamels away for anything less than what he's worth. There's a lot of criticism going around that Amaro needs to lower his asking price, and that's nothing new. I mean, we've been hearing that since the beginning of the season, even into the offseason, that Amaro needs to lower his asking price for Cole Hamels. Otherwise, he's not going to move him. If he wants to move him, ask for less. First of all, I don't think there's anyone that wants to move Cole Hamels. There's nobody that doesn't want Cole Hamels on their team. Amaro's trading Cole Hamels because he's not really selling him. He's buying a future. You got to think of it like buying a future and paying for it with Cole Hamels rather than selling Cole Hamels and, you know, getting what you can. I look at this and
exactly.
I agree with you. I think there's no urgency to trade him. You'll have him in the offseason. You'll have him at the next deadline. You'll have him at the next offseason. You'll have him at the next deadline. You'll have him in the following offseason. You'll have Cole Hamels for a little while. His contract's not up. It's not a Scott Kazmir situation where he's got to go. You got to get something for him so he doesn't just walk for nothing. If you don't get what you want, hold on to him. Although I also agree with Caleb in that I think he will be moved. I think that come July 31st, some team is going to bite. Some team's going to cave and some team's going to give in and say, yeah, we'll give you the prospects that you want. We want Cole Hamels. He's the best pitcher on the market. He's an established ace with a very great postseason track record. We want him. We'll give you what you want. Caleb, you mentioned the Dodgers as a potential landing spot for Cole Hamels, where he would be the three. Could you imagine a pitching rotation with Zach Greinke, Clayton Kershaw, and Cole Hamels in the postseason? Now, if we ignore what Kershaw did in last year's postseason, which was basically fall apart, and we just look at what they've been doing lately with the scoreless streaks and the ERA under 2 for Greinke and just the flat-out dominance from all three of them without looking at the numbers, could you imagine how dominant that pitching staff would be? I mean, is trading Cole Hamels to the Dodgers essentially trading them a World Series ring?
It would be close. I don't know. You've got a lot of competition because in just the National League, I would say if that were to happen, I would say that the best two teams with a shot to knock them off would be St. Louis and Pittsburgh, obviously, because those are the only two teams right now that have solid rotations and decent offenses. But if all three of those were all together, holy crap, I wouldn't want to face them. I would not want to face them. And the only chance that somebody would have of actually beating them is facing that fourth or that fifth man in the rotation, or if they just fall apart, just like Kershaw did last season. That's the only way, if that were to happen, that they would end up losing. But they do have to have some offense come from somewhere. At the beginning of this season, their offense was ridiculous. Adrian Gonzalez was absolutely insane. But since then, they haven't really had somebody that dominant at the plate. So they've needed they need to get some help there. They need to pick it up, and they need to catch fire. But I do think that would be the best rotation in baseball.
You compare it up 1-2-3 punch, it has to be. But then you match it up against that of, let's say, the Mets or it's hard to come up with another rotation.
I mean, the Pirates. I mean, the Pirates have three close pitchers. Garrett Cole, definitely.
Absolutely.
A.J. Burnett, definitely. Francisco Liriano would be a close. It wouldn't be nearly as good, but that would be a close second. If you look at Washington, you could go Gio Gonzalez, Max Scherzer, and Steven Strasburg, but Strasburg gets hurt all the time, so you can't really count on him for being there in the because he just gets hurt, so you can't really count on him to be there. But those really are the only two in the National League I think could possibly compete that potential potent rotation.
Caleb, you said it. You basically got to pray that Kershaw falls apart and that you've got your hottest offensive streak at in the entire season at the time you're heading into the series. That'd be a scary, scary matchup. But we got a caller on the line already early in the show, about a half hour in. We've got a caller. If anybody else wants to jump in, the number is 347-826-9964. We've got a chat room open. We're on Twitter at mmandurano, at Caleb on sports, and at Hegs_and_bacon. Also, you know the procedure for to Skype in. You just click on the Skype button and you connect right through. But we've got Rick on deck on the line. Let's bring him on, see what he's got to say. Rick on deck, welcome to the Cleanup Hitters.
Thank you, Mike and Caleb and Sean. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, good. What's on your mind, Rick?
Oh, it's an interesting conversation you guys are having. Obviously, I'm a Philadelphia fan, so some of the trade talk is quite interesting surrounding what just happened with Papelbon, and certainly the big piece is the Cole Hamels talk. And I certainly side with those who feel that it's not urgent to trade Cole Hamels just for the sake of trading him. I think that, you know, the Phillies have some history of making some poor trades when it comes to trading top-line pitchers and top-line players, and it dates back to even, you know, guys like Curt Schilling, who was traded away for very little, Scott Rolen, who was traded for very little. But if you want to look at recent history, the Cliff Lee deal, when they traded him to Seattle to supposedly stock their farm system and, you know, look to the future. I mean, we got Philip Amont, Tyson Gillies, and J.C. Romero. Which one of those guys has really changed the fortune of the Phillies? None of them. So if I'm going out and I'm talking to Texas, I'm talking to, you know, perhaps Boston. I don't know if they're still in the picture or not. But, you know, the teams that are coming to the table now, especially after Cole's last outing, I'm holding steady. It's like you guys are putting, you know, your guys are telling me that there's certain players that are untouchable in your organization. That's not flying with me. First of all, the number one guy in your organization is coming over to me, or you're not getting Cole Hamels. And that's just the beginning. I mean, so my asking price, the people who say that I think Amaro's asking price should come down, I don't agree with that. I think Amaro's asking price should stay right where it is if he's not asking for, like, the top five prospects, obviously. But I don't think asking for the top one or two prospects in a organization is outside of reasonable. I think it's what you should expect for the chance to win a World Series. I think that teams are trying to basically secure a chance to win the World Series while at the same time not touching their future. Well, baseball doesn't work that way in trades. I mean, you can't have your cake and eat it too. So you're either going to try to win now or you're going to protect your future and perhaps hurt your chances for winning now. So I'm in agreement that there's no real rush to trade Cole Hamels. I think, you know, he's under contract for the next few years. So there's going to be other opportunities to trade him, if that's what you will. Or maybe the Phillies should just take a look at perhaps trying to, increase the timeline on this this rebuild, so to speak. And perhaps Hamels is still the guy who you make the centerpiece of your rotation. I mean, you know, if it's going to be another 4 or 5 years, yeah, that doesn't work. But if you can rebuild in the next 2 years, I think that then you can have Hamels and Nola at the top of your rotation be in good shape.
Well, you got at least one agreement behind this microphone. You got more agreements coming from the chat room. All good points. And, Rick, I agree with you. I think especially when you look at the Phillies and you look at Cole Hamels as the last piece they have to really get any big return for the future. They could trade Revere. They could trade Francoeur. They could move Utley. They could trade, you know, go ahead and even trade Giles. They could trade guys. But you're not going to get a top prospect for any of those guys. And I agree with you. I don't think it's too much to ask for a top one or two prospect. I think when they are talking with the Dodgers and they say, we want Corey Seager or Julio Urias or Arias, you don't even have to ask for both. If you ask for one and the Dodgers look at it and you say, no, you're crazy, I take that as offensive. I look at I look at the situation, and the Red Sox, who refuse to give up prospects. You don't trade for an ace without giving up prospects. You can't do it. If you're the other team and you're talking to the Phillies, you are taking the Phillies' best player. You're taking an established ace with a great postseason track record. You're taking a guy that you know is going to be an ace for the next couple of years, as opposed to a Johnny Cueto or a Jeff Samardzija, who has a couple breakout years. Samardzija even a breakout half of a season, and establishes themselves as an ace. Cole's been an ace for 10 years now. You know what you're getting.
Yep.
You look at the return for Samardzija, you look at the return for Cueto, and Cole should be getting twice that.
And the interesting thing about that as well is that, you know, some people were looking at Hamels' last two starts before the no-hitter and saying, oh, you know, that blew his trade value. It's like, are you kidding me? It's like, this guy has been, like you said, an ace for 10 years. He's a World Series MVP. He's done it. It's like, these other guys have not, and they don't have as long a track record. And, you know, I just thought that, you know, a lot of the commentary out there was kind of like a slap in the face to Cole Hamels as well. It's like, this is a top-of-the-line guy. This is not a number two. This is not a number three, middle-of-the-rotation guy. This is a top-flight guy that you're trading for. And the interesting thing is that the hottest commodity a couple years ago was Ault from Texas. Where's he these days? It's like, so prospects are exactly that, are prospects. So it's like, I don't care how high you are on the guy. I don't care how close he is to major league ready. Until he proves that he can do it in the major leagues, he's not a major league player.
Well, Rick, I do agree with you. And I look at Cole, like I said, he's really their last piece to trade. If you're the Phillies, you can't miss.
Right.
And in this case, quality is much, much better than quantity. You don't want six double-A pitchers that are all 24 years old. You don't want a bunch of single-A guys. Granted, you're not going to get a Mookie Betts you're not going to get a Byron Buxton, guys who have already shown that they're going to be good major league players, that they can handle the major league level. But you can look at prospects and say, I want at least one guy that has the potential to be a superstar, but maybe he doesn't turn out to be a star, but at the very, very least, he'll be in my lineup for 6-7 years and be a productive player. At the very, very least, he'll be in my rotation for 6-7 years and be a productive pitcher. You want a surefire guy. You want a guy that says, yes, I'm going to be on your major league club in whether it's 2 years, 1 year, or 6 years. I'll be there eventually, and I'll be there for a while. And I might be a superstar, or I might be an average player, but I'll be there. And then you want a guy or two that has the potential to be a superstar, where if you miss, you can fall back on the other guy and say, at least we got something. But if you hit and you strike gold, then it's a huge, huge win. And if you're trading a Cole Hamels with as much of the contract as he has left, you have every right to expect a team to give you their top prospects. You don't need 1, 2, and three, but to ask for one of your top three, or just your number one, or a number two and a mid-level prospect, or a number three, your number three prospect and a major league ready player, is not too much to ask for an ace that's going to go to a team and probably be the difference between first round bump, maybe even miss the playoffs, and World Series. It's not too much to ask, Rick.
Exactly.
I think you have excellent points.
Yep. And if I may, I think Caleb was talking about the Dodgers a little bit. Well, you all were, about the Dodgers and the strength that Hamels would bring to that pitching staff. The one thing that I do caution, because the Phillies had a few teams with some pretty strong pitching, but if he can't hit, I mean, that's the weak link there. I mean, especially when you may be seeing teams like the Cardinals in the playoffs, because the Cardinals have shown that, you know what, they can be patient enough that they can eke out two or three runs against your best pitchers. And if you can't hit, guess what? You're going to lose 2-0 to the Cardinals. So I think that, you know, that's just one word of caution in building, you know, those master pitching, you know, staff, that you still need some offense to go with them, because
I mean,
if they're pitching 7-8, you know, no run innings, but then you have nothing, you haven't scored anything, you're not really anywhere except 8 innings deep into a game that you haven't won yet.
Yeah, and Rick, I'd have to put in the example of the Phillies when they brought in Roy Halladay and brought back Cliff Lee. I mean, we were supposed to have this all-star pitching staff and never even made it to a World Series with those guys. I mean, that was a rotation of, I mean, three elite pitchers and, you know, a couple of guys who got the job done. And, you know, where'd we go with that? I mean, we were supposed to win multiple world championships when we had those guys, and we didn't, and it's because the offense was suffering. So I agree with you there that even with the best pitching staff, you still need to have that bit of offense that's going to put you over the top.
But I still think you hold the Dodgers for ransom, too.
Oh, yeah.
So sure. What are your guys – I'd like to hear what your guys' feelings are about Puig. And I mean, there's been a lot of commentary about, you know, the fact that he's a potential disruptor in the clubhouse, you know, how he would play in a place like Philadelphia even, you know, if, you know, he's been known to dog it a little bit on a couple plays. We know how that turned out for Jimmy Rollins, a couple ground balls he didn't run out. I mean, you know, is Puig the right fit? I know there's a boatload of potential, and he certainly showed that he can do it at the major league level, although he's fallen off and cooled off quite a bit in the last, I'd say, year of baseball that he's played. He's batting about .250, and I think he has about 11 home runs in the last, if you go back to about a year of baseball played. So, I mean, his most recent performance, you know, maybe it's just that, again, he's dissatisfied with L.A., but what are your guys' thoughts about how he would fit in Philadelphia?
Caleb and Sean, tell me what you think here, but I look at Puig as one of those guys, similar to Papelbon, actually, that if this team were good, he would be loved. Fans would love him. But as long as this team doesn't win, would not get along with the fans. Would not. Mm-hmm. It all depends on the vibe of the city. As far as a baseball player goes, though, I mean, I really would hate to have to root for the guy. But if he were to come to Philadelphia, I mean, he's a good player. I don't know if it's enough straight up for a Cole Hamels, let's say, but he's a good player. I mean, there's no knocking a Yasiel Puig. Sean and Caleb.
I would agree with you there, Nick.
Go
ahead, Caleb.
I definitely would not want him on my team. Now, he can play great. He's got a great bat, great glove. But as you guys had said, there are some issues with hustle. He doesn't always run things out when you should. But his attitude, I just don't like the way that he plays, just the attitude in general that he has and that he kind of carries with him. So I just don't think that he would be, especially in Philadelphia, I just don't think he would be a good fit there because they don't really tolerate that. The lack of hustle, the lack of anything, you know, it just doesn't work like that. So I would not like him on my team. Some would just because of the potential, but I don't care how much of a potential that you actually have. If you don't have the correct attitude that you should have, I don't want you as a representative of my team that I cheer for.
Well, Caleb, as a non-Phillies fan, taking fandom out of it, would he fit?
Right now, no. I just don't see him as the right fit because they need a lot more pieces. One man's just not going to show up and fix it. Now, in 2 years, they get some good pitching. They get some better hitters. Then, yeah, he would be a decent fit there. He actually would be. I'm just not sure how his personality would collide with the front office there. You know, I'm just not exactly sure. So we would have to see. But I do think that if Philly were to trade for, let's just say, Puig and a mid-level prospect, for Hamels, then maybe he would be the piece that they would try to build around, that he would be that Chase Utley of old, the Ryan Howard of old, that, you know, if they try to build that team around them, because that's the big guy who's going to come and he's going to hit the ball when they need to. So potentially he would be that guy. But right now, I think it would just be a bigger hassle to have him because, one, Philadelphia is not doing so hot. So I just feel like Puig would just get mad and frustrated because his team's not winning. I can just see him as one of those who is really a competitive man, which is fantastic because you have to have that, but almost to a fault where if your team's not doing good, he doesn't know how to keep it a level head no matter what, that you always give it 100% no matter what.
See, I look at the situation, and again, I'm not going to put it in perspective of a Cole Hamels trade because I don't think a straight-up trade, that's enough of a return, and I don't want to speculate who else would come with them and whatnot, but just sticking him on the Phillies, yeah, the attitude's a problem, the morale's an issue, the team chemistry's an issue, but I almost consider the Phillies desperate enough that why not? And Caleb, you make a good point, they need more pieces, they do, but I think when you have star power in the lineup like Yasiel Puig or, I can't come up with another example off the top of my head, but the potential to just be a superstar, if he were to pan out, he's an Andrew McCutchen. He is a Paul Goldschmidt, a guy that you hope you can, not to the same caliber, but a guy you can hope you can build around. Because right now we look at the Phillies and all three of you can answer, Sean, Caleb, and Rick on deck. Who on the Phillies do you build your franchise around? Franco? Do you build it around Franco? Do you build it around Ken Giles, your future closer? Hamels is going to be gone. Howard's old and stinks. Utley's old and stinks. You need somebody just to set the foundation. Would the attitude be that big of a problem that we can't look past it just to have that cornerstone of the franchise, someone that we can use as a building block and start there?
Nick, I agree with you there. I really think that he, on the off chance that he could be a building block for the future of this Phillies team, I actually wouldn't mind having him here. I mean, as much as I hate the attitude, I mean, it's something I could get over if I see the Phillies starting to, get this guy settled in Philadelphia, start making some moves to get building blocks to put around him, and then, I mean, maybe within the next couple of years, we could see a Phillies team that probably won't be in contention for the World Series, but might have aspirations to make the playoffs. So, minus the attitude, I don't think it would be a bad addition to the Phillies team with the situation that we're in now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the fence a little bit about Puig. Just because you are building, or the plan is to build with young players, so players with bad attitudes tend to have an impact on young players. Like if Puig was coming to a veteran team, say that he was coming to the 2008 Phillies, I think that's a lot different situation than Puig coming and being the centerpiece that everybody's going to look up to. And if he's not ready for that role, that could be disastrous. So first,
very
I think you have to have the right coach in place. And secondly, I think you have to, I don't know what kind of recon that you can do, but I think you have to sit down and talk to Puig and say, look, if we trade for you, if we bring you here, this is what our expectations of you are going to be. You know, can you live with that? I mean, can you be a leader on the team, and can you suffer through perhaps one or two seasons of pretty bad baseball until we get the pieces in place that we can build around you with? And I think the answers to those questions would be very, very critical to making Puig the guy that I'm going to build around. Because, again, I think that you guys have had discussions about Bryce Harper, and we're seeing what kind of season he's having this year. It's like, so superstars in the making don't always do it without bumps in the road. So I don't think that you can discount the fact that Puig has the potential to be a superstar in the league, just given his first year and what he was able to do. But I think that, you know, with players like him, you've got to decide, is he going to mature and become the leader that you want him to be, or is he always going to be that person that is kind of a disruptive force? And I think the comparison to Papelbon is a good one. I think bringing Puig to a team that's not successful may not work out.
I think another guy you could look to the Phillies to build around is J.P. Crawford coming through, a guy a lot of people forget, and just recently named the sixth best overall prospect in all of baseball. Now everybody's sitting here talking about Aaron Nola, and we're forgetting to get excited about J.P. Crawford here in Philadelphia. But Rick on deck, thanks a lot for calling in. Great discussion here with the Phillies. I definitely want to move and talk about the Royals, though, because the Royals also made a great trade bringing in Johnny Cueto. This is a team that had a struggling starting pitching staff, but a team that wanted to prove to everybody that last year they weren't a fluke. And Sean and Caleb, if you remember, really early on in this show, we talked about predictions for how divisions would turn out. And we talked about the AL Central. And we looked at this team, and I didn't have them very high. I don't remember where you two had them, but I know McShane, Frethouse Mike, would not let us forget that he liked the Royals, and he didn't think they were a fluke, and they'd be a good team. And sure enough, they're one of the best in baseball, and they did it with a struggling starting pitching rotation. Now they go and they add Johnny Cueto, one of the best pitchers in baseball, and they become even scarier. This team now, I think, with the addition of Johnny Cueto, became legitimate. Because I still thought they were a very, very good team, but I didn't know how they would fare in the postseason without a true ace. You could look at Ventura. You could look at any of the other pitchers on staff, and I don't think any of them are really true aces. Now you get one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, and they're a legitimate threat in the playoffs. Sean, Caleb, somebody jump in. What do you think the addition of Johnny Cueto did for the Royals?
I think that it was a really big move for them because it showed that they realized that this is their final chance to do anything, because they've got Alex Gordon's he's a free agent. I believe Lorenzo Cain is, and there's a couple of other guys that are really key that they are in their final year of their contract. And so they're showing that, hey, this is our final shot, and they are really owning that. And yeah, you had said this, they didn't have an ace. And like in Edison Volquez, he's not going to be your ace. Aventura, he's not going to be your ace. There was no set guy that they're going to hand that ball to first game. Now they've got that guy. They know who that guy is. If they get to the World Series, he will be pitching in the first, fourth, and seventh game. That's the guy. There is no doubt about it. No doubt. And now they add in Ben Zobrist. Wow. They're really making sure that he's there, and that they have a backup, and that they are going to be set. That's what they're really trying to really do here. And, you know, they don't have that overpowering offense, but they've got one of the best bullpens in the game, and even arguably the best in the game. And I believe that that's how they've really kept this thing kind of going, is that, yeah, their pitching, their rotation wasn't very good, but their bullpen came up and saved them. So I feel like that's how they've gotten to here, but now they can rely less on the bullpen and more on their pitching from the get-go here.
Rick, I kept you on the line here because I just wanted to hear what you had to say about the Royals acquiring Johnny Cueto.
Sure. I think it was an excellent move. I mean, I think the Royals in getting Cueto I mean, it gives a legitimacy to their pitching staff. And like Caleb said, if you get to the World Series and your pitching is lined up, Cueto can be one, you know, pitch three games, much like Baumgartner did last year for the Giants. So that's the one thing about playoff baseball, too. I mean, your rotation gets shortened, so it kind of can cover some of those, you know, back of the rotation issues, and that's the reason why you don't need, you know, five number one starters in your lineup. I mean, when you get to the playoffs, not all of them would be pitching anyway. So I think that Cueto gives a good offensive team a legitimate number one guy. So I think they're a well-balanced team going into the playoffs. I mean, I think that's more important than being, and as I'll say, you know, I'll use the Dodgers as an example, and if they did trade for Hamels, I think they're a little light on the offensive side, which could hurt them. I prefer being a balanced team, and when you look at the, you know, when you look at the Royals, I think that they are a much more balanced team with a number one starter. So I like the move a lot. I mean, yeah, if they had had a couple of young prospects and would have traded for Hamels and, you know, set up the Phillies, I would have liked it a lot better. But the fact that they got, you know, they got a top of the line starter, I think they should be a team that's feared this year. I mean, hey, they made the World Series last year and now they've added a top line pitcher. I think they should be feared.
All right. I don't have much to add. I think Caleb and Rick definitely hit the nail on the head there. With the addition of Cueto, it really gives the Kansas City Royals an ace that they were missing from this team that was already doing very well. So I think it's safe to say that they're going to have a very legitimate chance at the World Series, definitely to the playoffs. So we'll have to see where that goes there. And Rick on deck, we're going to have to let you go here so we can move on with the rest of the program. But it was good hearing from you. We always love hearing from you here at the Frat House.
Oh, it was really fun talking to you guys tonight. Great show.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Always good to hear from Rick on deck. Probably our most active caller, always adding to a very good discussion. But we talked about Cole Hamels. We talked about Johnny Cueto. Guys on the market like Jeff Samardzija, David Price, James Shields, Tyson Ross. These are starting pitchers that could be moved, might not be moved. They're kind of on the fringe markets. And one of the reports today is that the Phillies are asking for all of the club's best offers by tomorrow. I think a reasoning for that is because these guys aren't yet on the market. These other starting pitchers aren't yet on the market. They're still holding on to their pitchers because they're trying to see what their team really can do, and they're going to wait until the very last second to make a decision. They're not going to make a decision before they don't have to. And I think when those pitchers are on the market, it undervalues Cole Hamels because these teams can look and say, do we want to give up a top prospect for Cole, or do we want to go get a David Price for less, Jeff Samardzija for less? And you're not going to get as much for Cole Hamels. I think when Cole Hamels is the only name on the market, you got a lot more teams going for him, and you got a lot more prospects that are available to be traded. So I think one of the reasons the Phillies did this is to move Hamels and to get a team's offer for Hamels while these three pitchers aren't on the market, really to maximize value. But at some point, you have to imagine these three are going to come back on the market, or at least maybe some. So we look at a Jeff Samardzija, we look at David Price, we look at James Shields. Again, it hasn't exactly been definitively cleared up whether these guys are available for trade or whether these teams are going to hold on to their starting pitchers. So these three specific names, again, Samardzija, Price, and Shields, what do you, if you guys were GMs, are they on the market? Are you buyers? Are you sellers? Or what are you asking for them? What do you think about these guys?
Well, for a guy like David Price, I've heard some different things about him, that he will be moved, you know, so on and so forth. But from what I've kind of gathered and what I can see, the Tigers, they're not sellers right now. They're looking to buy. They're in their mind, they're thinking, hey, we still have a shot at this. They're only three games out of the wild card. That's it. they still have a legitimate chance whenever Cabrera, he comes back in the next couple of weeks here. They've got a legitimate chance to make it to the playoffs and make a run. You've got a Verlander who, yeah, this season he's not really done a whole lot because, you know, he's really been hurt, all that. But he's done it in the postseason. He's done it in the past. And then you've got a guy like a David Price who's just ridiculous. They can do some major damage. So a team like that, I just feel like they're not looking to sell anyone. But, you know, a guy like a James Shields, you know, the Padres, they're pretty much done, and they realize that. You know, so they're trying to look for him, Justin Upton, to see where they want to move those guys to get some of the payroll gone. I mean, I would look at these things, and also for Samardzija. I mean, both of those guys, Shields and Samardzija, I just think that they need to be out there because I feel like they would get something for them right now because I know that there's at least four different teams interested in Hamels that are making legitimate offers, at least four. But I'm sure that there's a lot more teams that are wanting him and that they're trying to make a package to hope that the Phillies are that they will actually take that. So if I were one of the GMs from one of these other teams, why would you not try to just put him out there and just see? Just see what somebody offers you. And if they're like, nope, that's not really what I was hoping for, then say no. But if somebody offers you a lot, two really good prospects, a major leaguer, whatever, then take it. Because your seasons are basically over. Sorry, but the Padres season, they're done. All right, I'm sorry, but they're done. So look, try to move an Upton, try to move a Shield. Just see what is out there and see what everyone's willing to actually give you for them.
So you're saying at least test the field.
Exactly, yeah. Just see what they have, what they are willing to actually give you. Because, hey, who knows, maybe somebody wants a guy like a James Shields more than a Hamels, which that's not the case. But, hey, who knows? Maybe there is somebody out there that's like, hey, I would rather have a righty, you know, so on and so forth. So you don't actually realize that until you're actually out there into the water trying to actually test it out there.
Sean, jump in here. React to that. What do you think?
I wouldn't have to disagree with what Caleb's saying here. I think it's definitely a good option to kind of see what's out there. I don't know that you'd necessarily make any moves particularly. I don't know, you know, if you're going to sell or if you're going to buy come trade deadline, but I think every team is definitely and should be willing to go out there and see what they could possibly get for anyone that they got. I mean, say David Price. I mean, Caleb was talking about how Detroit is a contender for the playoffs, but at the same time, I mean, maybe there's something else that you need on your team that you could kind of go out and not necessarily trade David Price, but definitely kind of hit him out on the market and see if anyone would bite at a deal that, you know, might put you in a place where you want to be. Again, not saying that you would necessarily make that move, but just to see, you know, what's out there, what could possibly happen. Maybe you're testing the waters for next year. I mean, maybe they're not willing to get rid of him now because they're so close to the playoffs. But maybe next year, if they're not so close to the playoffs, they can take the information they got from this year, who they could get him for, what kind of price tag they could throw on him, and then use that to their advantage come next year.
Exactly. Just try. You just got to try and see what somebody's willing to give you. I mean, yeah, you don't have to right now make a choice, but just see what somebody is actually willing to actually give you so that you can have that as some sort of a leverage thing next season. Or even, hey,
maybe later this season, maybe in the off season. Who knows?
I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it'd be logical to at least put him out there and say, hey, in case he is on the market, what are you guys offering? We're listening. We're not exactly looking to trade these three guys or any one of these three guys, but we're listening. In case there's something we really, really like, our ears are peeled. A David Price, a Jeff Samardzija, guys that you know are going to be good pitchers. A James Shields, I think of the three, I'm least interested in James Shields because I think he it's ironic. They give him the nickname Big Game James, but really if you look at his postseason numbers, they're not outstanding. They're not fantastic.
They're really not. You're right.
They're really not. And if you remember last postseason, I said that going into the postseason. I said Big Game James, ironically enough, has struggles pitching in big games. And I remember after I said that, everybody said, oh, no, he's Big Game James. He's going to do great. And sure enough, he falls apart in the postseason. I don't think he's a bad pitcher. I think he's a good pitcher to have on your roster for these final 2 months if he's going to be your two or your three. But I like Jeff Samardzija, and I really, really, really like David Price. But I look at David Price as the least likely to go because, you know, Caleb, like you said, I think they're still in limbo. I think they're still weighing options here. They're looking to see what's on the board. It'll be interesting to see if any of those three are even heavily discussed to the degree that Hamels is right now, or if they're just completely forgotten about. If they're put away in a closet, shut away, and said, no, try in the offseason or try next year. For now, we're going to try to win. It'll be interesting. It'll surely be interesting. Another big move that happened recently, Caleb, your Pirates going out to get Aramis Ramirez from the Brewers? So,
yep.
I mean, that's another acquisition from a team what makes this deadline so interesting is that there's so many teams that are just right there, right? Other than maybe the Cardinals, maybe the Angels at this point, given the way they've been playing recently, there's no real team that you say, yeah, they're illegitimate. They don't have to do anything and they'll still be a legitimate World Series contender. Every single one of them is good enough to play in the World Series, but because they're all good enough to be World Series teams, they're all in trouble enough that they got to do something. There's a lot of teams in contention, and it's not even just in contention for the final spot in the playoffs. There's a lot of teams in contention to win the pennant. So you look
exactly.
at the Pirates, and this Aramis Ramirez trade playing in a division, a really the toughest division in baseball. I mean, I was talking with a buddy the other day about this division, the NL Central, and I was saying how the Cubs, who are in, what, third place in the division, would be in first in the NL East. By record, yes, but they're better than the Nationals and the Mets. They would have an easier schedule, and they wouldn't have a half-game lead. They'd have a seven-game lead. The Nationals, meanwhile, NL East, with almost an identical record as the Cubs, would be in third or fourth place in the NL Central, probably close to 20 games behind like the Reds right now. It's a tough division, and the Pirates are not only chasing the Cardinals. They're hanging on to that wild card spot. They're really just fighting for a playoff seed. And again, if they catch the Cardinals, it comes down to one game. They could win 100 games this year, and if the Cardinals win 101, the Pirates' playoff fate relies on one game against whether it's the Cardinals, whether it's the Cubs, whether it's the Giants, whether it's the Nationals or the Mets. It'll rely on one game. So all these additions that the Pirates are adding are crucial and very important because it's not a cakewalk for these guys. They've got a tough schedule ahead. They've got a tough division and a really, really, really tough situation if they don't win the division. So adding Aramis Ramirez, in my opinion, should be only the beginning of what this team is trying to do. You mentioned their pitching staff earlier on the show. I think they go out and they see what else they can get pitching-wise. I think you add more bats. I think you do whatever you can to buy and buy and buy in this team because for the first time in a long time, the Pirates are legitimate World Series contenders, and it's tough. It's tough, and you don't know if you're going to be in the same situation next year. And this year, like I said, it's very, very tough given the environment around them. So Caleb and Sean, the two of you, Caleb especially as a Pirates fan, adding Aramis Ramirez, how big is that? And speculatively, what percentage of the deadline does Aramis Ramirez make up for in terms of the Pirates? Are they done? Are they going to do more? Should they do more? Is this all they need? What do you guys think? Someone jump in.
Well, I mean, for me, I mean, I don't know. I really think that we should try to go out and get something else. Will we? No. Huntington is going to be done what he's trying to go and get, because Ramirez was a guy to come in to fill in for some injuries. Josh Harrison is out until the third week of August. Jordy Mercer is now out later than that. So though that killed the left side of our infield, that just decimated it. So now we were in a position at right after the All-Star break where we were like, okay, who's going to play third base? Who's going to play shortstop? So yeah, we have Jung Ho Kang, but he can only play third or short. He can't be at this, like, he's got to pick one. So that means we had to try to fill others with some the minor league system, and we just didn't have a guy in that position ready for that type of a role. So going out to get him gives us, one, a veteran who knows what he's like. He knows how the game goes. He knows what to really do at this time in the season. He knows how it goes. Plus, he's actually hitting the ball pretty well. And he has a career average of 300 in August and 290 in September. So those are the numbers that you want in somebody to really come in and help, because that is going to get the offense going. And the first game back, he hit two shots off the wall. I mean, this guy is ready to go. He just looks honed in, and he's ready. Now, the Pirates, they do need to try to get somebody else, whether it be a relief man, another guy in the rotation, because Charlie Morton scares the daylights out of me every time he takes that mound. I cannot stand seeing him pitch. And funny enough, the two games that I've went to, he was pitching in both of those games. So that just happened. But Charlie Morton is great and all. Yeah, he's good, but he just doesn't have it. He just doesn't have what it takes in crunch time. He just doesn't have it. So going out, finding a Samardzija, finding a Shields, potentially, who I think would be a much better option than the right-handed Charlie Morton. Now, if we can go out and if we can get a David Price, a Cole Hamels, that doesn't really mortgage our entire future, I say go for it. I mean, I've written a couple things over the past month saying, hey, why don't we try to go and get a Goldschmidt from the Diamondbacks? Yeah, I realize we would have to basically give up our top three prospects, but they're just prospects. They are not proven major leaguers yet. They're only a prospect that have hopes of making it into the majors and having a Hall of Fame type of a career. But Goldie's out here the best first baseman, arguably, in the league. Why don't you try to go after somebody like that when that's a need on our side? Try to go after somebody like him. Even Edwin Encarnacion from the Blue Jays. Why don't you try to go give them a pitcher that they need, and in return they give us something we need. So there's a lot of things that we could try to do, and I think that we really need to get another big bat, because that is where it's killing us. Our pitching, I think it's going to be all right. I think things are going to shake out fine, but adding a relief man and another bigger bat would be huge, because like you had said, Nick, this is our time. Right now, the Pirates are a legitimate World Series contender right now. And there is a balance between not mortgaging your future, but also going after it when the time is now. And that time is right now.
Sean, Pirates, Aramis Ramirez, the time being right now, everything Caleb just rattled off, reactions. He even threw out Paul Goldschmidt as a possible target. What do you think, man?
I mean, again, I think what Caleb was saying, I mean, to get a guy like Goldschmidt, you're going to have to give up a lot. So, I mean, I think it's really going to be on the Pirates to determine whether this is their time and this is their last chance. I mean, if this is their last chance, if that's what we're saying within the next few years, like this is the chance for the Pirates to win the World Series, I think it would be worth getting rid of some prospects to bring in guys who are going to solidify this team and make them a serious World Series contender, which they are right now. They're definitely a contender, but that guy that's going to put them over the top and really put them in a good position to make it to and win the World Series. However, if this is a team where we're going to see a pattern over the next couple of years with them in the same position, maybe it's not the best idea to throw everything away now when it could be done a few years down the road. Say, I mean, leave it the way things are this year, see how it goes, next year see where you went wrong, and then you can make those moves that you didn't make this year if you're in the same position come trade deadline next year. However, that's going to be a decision that the Pirates are going to have to make. And Caleb, I'll throw it back at you. What do you think at this point? Do you think that the Pirates are still buyers, or do you think they're going to sit on what they have now and let the season ride out?
Right now, we're just going to sit it. We're just going to sit here and wait it out, unless there is a relief guy that they think could help us out. But that's the only thing I think right now that we're going to buy. I think that's it. There's been things the Pirates have said that they're going to keep Pedro Alvarez, that they've really decided that they're just going to ride him out, which the upside of him is that type of a Goldschmidt power. He's got the ability to, and he's shown it in the past. I mean, 2013, 30-something home runs. He's got the power to do it, but it's all the mental self. He cannot play defense. That's his biggest thing. So if he can learn to play some defense, I think that will transition into the offense for that. And if the Pirates think that he will be able to do that, then they're not going to make any other moves. If they really believe that they can get what they need out of Sean Rodriguez, Travis Ishikawa, and Pedro Alvarez, if they think that those three guys can give them what they need, then they're not going to make any moves. And I think right now, I think that they're not going to make any moves. And Pedro Alvarez, the day that there was a trade rumor about him, he hit two home runs. The next day, more and more trade rumors, hits another one out. So he is definitely responding to what's happening, which is really good for him and for the Pirates, because it's actually showing, hey, he's still in there. Like, he can still hit the baseball. So right now, I don't think that we're going to make any other moves, because I think that we do have about a three-year period, because that's when we start really losing guys, is after the 2017 season. That's when Marte's contract's up, McCutcheon's contract's up, Polanco, and a few other guys. That's really the big year. So I think that this year and for the next year, we're just going to trade to fill some injuries. And that's what we've already done here. We only got Ramirez because of the injuries. That's the only reason why. And you've got to think, Josh Harrison hasn't been in the lineup. He's a huge leadoff hitter who gets it really going for the Pirates, and we haven't had that guy. And so that's really hurt us. Jordy Mercer, the defense of him is insane, but the offense is timely. It's kind of an inconsistent thing, but he shows up. So those two guys out, I think that once those guys are back, things are going to be a little bit different. And I think that some of the people in and around Pittsburgh are kind of overreacting that, oh, we have to trade for the biggest guys right now. While I do think that we need to make that trade to get some guys, but I think that we're going to be all right.
All right, we're nearing the end of the show, so before we move any further, I want to get into our series streak picks. It's getting real tight and real interesting, and then after that, with the time we have left, just to give you guys some time to think, a little heads up, one thing that's not Hamels, that's not anything huge, one maybe overlooked aspect of the deadline that you were really, really keeping an eye on in these next couple of days. I want to hear what you guys have to say, but first, I didn't know this. I'm looking through the sound bites on the right side of the studio here, and Frat House Mike has music for our series streak picks. I didn't know that, so we're going to give that a shot. We're going to play that and see how that goes while we do this. So, cleanup hitter series streak. What is this? This is week, 9 plus 7 is 16, 17. This is week 17 of the series streak. Here it comes. See, here's the music. I told you I got it. We got Frat House Mike's pick coming in from the Delaware Shore. He's got the Dodgers over the Angels in the three-game series. He won last week. Sean, you won last week. Caleb, you won last week. I lost last week. Again, I'm struggling. I actually no longer have sole possession of first place in the Father's League. Frat House Mike has caught me. We're tied first at 9-7. Caleb, you are next on the list at 8-8, a game behind. And Sean, with your win last week, you moved to 7-9, 2 games behind first place. So it's getting really, really, really tight. We'll begin with Caleb. Caleb, this week, your series three pick, who do you got?
Well, I'm going to take the Giants over the Rangers this week.
And then how about you, Sean? Who do you got?
I'm going to take the Marlins over the Padres.
All right, so we've got... I didn't get my pick. And I'm going back... I'm going back to my my comfort zone. I've been struggling, so I'm going back to what I know and love. I'm picking Seattle over Minnesota in a three-game series this weekend. So we've got Seattle over Minnesota for Nick. Caleb's got San Fran over Texas. Sean's got Miami over San Diego. And Mike has the Dodgers over the Angels. All right, so there are series picks. As I said, it's getting really, really tight. It'll be interesting to see... who winds up on top. I told you guys, I'm getting nervous. But we've got about 7 minutes left on the show, six and a half minutes left on the show. Sean and Caleb, whoever wants to jump in first, one thing that maybe we didn't touch on today that you're really keeping your eyes peeled for in these next couple of days before 4 o'clock on Friday.
Well, for me, I'm really looking to see what other unexpected trades are going to happen. I'm looking at some teams like the Rangers, looking to see what they're going to do. The Blue Jays, even, to look and see what they're going to do pitching-wise. And even a team like the Yankees. They were mentioned for the Cole Hamels thing, but they've been kind of put on the back burner here. I wouldn't be too surprised if the Yankees try to jump up here and try to get Hamels or somebody else. So I'm just really trying to watch the teams that have kind of been on the back burner, looking to see what they're gonna try to do in the next 2 to 3 days here.
Sean, anything you're looking for last couple of days?
Not really. I mean, I'm interested as far as the Chase Utley talk goes. I'm interested to see if that had any sort of meat to it or if that was just something that was, you know, brought up out of the blue. So, I mean, hey, keep an eye out for that. And also I'd like to see, you know, what ends up happening to Hamels in the end of this. Is someone going to shell out for him or are we going to see him in a Phillies uniform for another year?
I think everybody's got their eyes peeled on Chase Utley here. Again, the fact that anybody had interest in Chase is interesting enough. Sean, if rumors really do heat up or even a deal is made involving Chase, I'm sure it'll be what we talk about next Tuesday. Caleb, you mentioned the Yankees. I think it's very possible that the Yankees see that they're getting hot. They see they've got a lead, and they get comfortable and decide not to make a move. But like you said, it'll be it's interesting to see if they think they need to make a move, if they're going to make a move. I think they have to make a move. I think they need to do something. I'm watching. I mentioned Tyson Ross earlier on the show. I think he's a name that we really haven't heard a whole lot of, that I think is a good piece on this market right now. I'm also watching. I'm watching to see if the Cardinals go out and buy anyone, because it doesn't really seem like they need to. But if everybody else gets better and the Cardinals don't, that's a little nerve-wracking. And they brought in Steve Cishek already. But it'll be interesting to see if they go try to get another bat or another arm. It'll absolutely, the next couple days are going to be hectic. It's already been hectic. But also, while I have time, I want to give a quick shout-out to tomorrow night's Frat House Sports Show. It is the fourth annual preseason round table. Now, Frat House Mike was telling me the round tables are usually their biggest hits, our biggest shows here at Frat House Sports. I haven't been around long enough to really experience one, but I'm excited to tune in tomorrow night, and I advise all of you to do the same. Frat House Sports, the preseason round table. That should be very, very interesting. We miss Frat House Mike. We hope he's having a good vacation. I want to thank Rick on Deck for calling in tonight and contributing to a very healthy discussion about Hamels and about Cueto. I thought tonight went really, really well, guys. We got a lot in, a lot of discussion. And we're on again next Tuesday at 7 o'clock again, as always. And by the time we and you communicate again, everything will be over with. Everyone who's going to be moved will be moved. Things will be a lot calmer. Everything will be settled, and it should be interesting. So before we sign off, any final thoughts from Caleb or Sean?
No, sir. Good show tonight. Great job, guys. First show alone.
Yep. It was a good show for all of us to, you know, kind of be out there on our own. But I do have one interesting thing to add. It will be interesting to watch how the National League East finishes out. That would be a very interesting thing to watch. Will Washington be able to hold on, or will the Mets find some way to get hot and overtake them for the division lead?
One thing I forgot to mention earlier in the show that I really wanted to touch on, and I'll do it here in the final minutes. Does anybody else find it a little suspicious that the Mets trade for Tyler Clippard, and then all of a sudden, Henry Mejia is busted again and receives a 162-game suspension? You think the Mets do a bit of a conspiracy theory here, perhaps?
I did not.
Well, you know how we feel about conspiracies here at Frat House. As Mike would say if he were here.
Very good point. I honestly had not put the two together. I did not think of that at all, but it almost makes you wonder, did they already know that was happening, so they were going to try to fill that spot with somebody else?
I'm a little suspicious. I'm a little suspicious.
I would agree. Just a little bit there.
Yeah, it's a little odd, but we'll let this one slide, at least for now. Maybe we'll talk about it on next week's show, next Tuesday at 7. That's just about all the time we have here of Frat House Sports Cleanup Hitters. Deadline is Friday at 4. I'm sure all three of us will be talking about it in some way, shape, or form. And if you want to get in touch with us while we're not on the air, or follow our thoughts while we're not on the air, we're all on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at NMandarano. Caleb's on Twitter at CalebOnSports. And Sean is on Twitter at Heggs_and_bacon. Heggs, H-E-G-G-S, because his last name is Hagen. I find that funny. From all of us to you, what does Mike always say? How does he always end the show? He says, hey, get out there. Enjoy yourself some baseball.
Enjoy your baseball.
There we go. Enjoy your baseball. So we'll be on next Tuesday at 7. Thanks for listening.